and welcome to Landscape Photography World, the podcast for everyone passionate about landscape photography. I'm Grant Swinburne, and I'll be your host on this show, talking to landscape photographers about their motivations, likes and dislikes. This week, I'm speaking with Kim Grant, an inspiring landscape photographer, podcast host and creator of Photographic Connections. Kim's profound connection with nature began in northeast Scotland, using photography as a therapeutic escape from anxiety at the age of 16. Growing up in Scotland, her life has always been deeply rooted in nature. Throughout her journey, she has developed a close relationship with it and works in harmony with nature to ground herself and express her creativity. As her passion evolved, she found it providing solace during a career in healthcare. Kim's approach to photography prioritises emotion and connection over technicalities, and she now dedicates herself to connecting others with the healing power of photography, sharing her wisdom on YouTube and the Photographic Connections podcast. We discuss finding her niche within the field of landscape photography, how she got started with YouTube and podcasting, and the importance of self-authenticity when establishing a photography business. I hope you enjoy the show. G'day, Kim. Welcome to Landscape Photography World. How are you doing?
Thank you, Grant. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really good. It's a bit hot and sweaty in here at the moment. I've got a fan going overhead because we're sitting in the middle of summer with 70 or 80% humidity and about 33, 34 degrees outside. That's what now, about 9 o'clock.
Stark contrast to put across the world.
Definitely. Thank you for agreeing to be on the show. I'm really pleased to get you on board. I know you've been on a number of other podcasts, and hopefully I'll ask you some questions that you haven't been asked before. But why don't we start with the one that most people always start with? How did you get into photography? Where did it all start for you?
Yeah, of course. So I began photography when I was 16 years old. I actually got into photography because I was in a very dark place at the time, and to try and relieve myself from the deep depression that I was in and the anxiety, I used to go down to the beach a number of evenings a week. I lived by the coast, and I used to sit on the sand dunes and watch the sunsets, and that was what gave me hope, basically, to continue with life. And one day I thought I'd love to connect with the sunset in a much more deeper level. And I decided photography was the way. So when I was 16, I got my first camera, and it allowed me to start photographing the sunsets and connecting with nature on a much deeper level and being creative in the process. So yeah, I loved it because although I was photographing the same location week in, week out, being by the coast, the sun, every sunset was different. The tide was always bringing in and out different things. And I just loved how just observing the lights and just being out there, it was like my solace amongst the turbulence.
Fair enough. There's a lot to unpack in that, actually. And I wouldn't mind unpacking some of that if you don't mind. I guess that mental health aspect is something which many photographers talk about, the benefits of both being outdoors, being in nature, seeing stuff that if you're up really early or out really late doing astro or something, a lot of people don't see is actually beneficial. And I think a lot of people also get caught up in that mindset of, okay, I'm going to create now and that's all I'm going to concentrate on and everything else slips out. Is that kind of where it's for you in terms of your mental health?
I guess so. I find when I'm out with a camera that I completely forget about everything else. I fully embody the experience. And for me, photography has always been a very emotional thing. Like, it's never been very technical. I've never really been that into gear or settings. And of course, I use these things as part of my work. But I've always been very much about feeling into the scene, and I just find so much beauty and awe and wonder in nature. So when I am going through a difficult time in whatever way that may be, I just find such a release in going out with a camera because it gives me a different perspective. I begin to see all the beautiful things that are surrounding us and deepen that connection to nature. Yeah, I think it gets me out of my head and into my heart, as I quite often say. I find it a very therapeutic experience.
Yeah, yeah. I think for a lot of people, that experience of getting out into nature alone can be enough. What is it about photography that's really got its hooks into you? And where in your journey did it start to become an artistic pursuit as opposed to a relaxation pursuit? And it might still be both.
I'd say it probably still is both. Yeah. Yeah, it probably still is both. I find photography is very creative for me now. It used to be, I didn't really see it as creative, I don't think, until a year or two ago. But yeah, it's definitely much more of the relaxation mixed with the creativity for me now. I love that sense and that feeling that you get when you're out there. And yeah, it's just beautiful. It really helps, I think, in so many ways. Mm. And yeah, I've forgotten the first half of that question.
So have I, to be honest. That's okay. We can freewheel it. That's fine. I guess what I was driving at was, where did the artistic expression start for you? Where did you say, okay, this is more than just getting out into nature. It's more than just sitting here looking at the sunset.
I think it's always been in the background for me, but it was always like unconscious. I think when you get into photography, to begin with, I was just very much responding to what I was seeing in whatever way I felt I wanted to. But of course, very soon into that, I started learning settings and looking at compositional rules and all that kind of stuff. And then I got tied into that for a number of years, photographing, I guess, the stereotypical landscape photographs. I think it wasn't until maybe 2 years ago when I started on a much more deeper self-discovery journey that I began to delve in more what I would call creative and artistic styles of photography, and really tapping into that emotional element that's always been there for me. But I feel like for many years I was photographing, I guess, the images that we're often told, the way that we're told makes good landscape images, and the locations we're told to go to get good photographs. But just from opening myself up about 2 years ago, it was during the pandemic, actually, when we were stuck and couldn't go to all these landscapes, I began doing macro, and then I began to realize how much I loved it. And then when we were able to explore again, I just found I wanted to be in my local area, but I wanted to photograph the landscapes in a different way, in a more creative way, really tapping back into the emotions that I felt when I first began photography. Dabbling in different forms of photography, like abstract and ICM and multiple exposures, and mixing all of that with some macro and showing like the grander scale of nature, but also the tiny little elements it makes up, I guess, a traditional landscape photograph. I always say there's 100 images in one landscape photograph, because there's so many things you could then go on to photograph in much greater detail.
Yeah, the choice of lens or gear that you're using can make a big difference to what you decide to focus on in that grander landscape, in terms of zoom lenses or a telephoto that brings you right up into elements of the landscape as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I love using a telephoto lens. I use that more now than I hardly ever take out my sort of wider angle lenses now. It's always a lens that's got a really varied focal range, so I can just go around my camera around my neck and just respond. Or I've got my 100 to 400 millimeter lens that I take out a lot to do abstracts and zooming into elements. And of course, my macro, I'll use that as a prime lens as well as a macro. So that gives me a lot of opportunities. So,
In terms of when you're thinking about a shoot, are you on the planning end of the spectrum or the spontaneous end of the spectrum, or somewhere in the middle?
Definitely spontaneous. I used to be a bit of a planner. Like, I'd be like, oh, sunset, I'm going to go to this location. But now I think, because I like to photograph now when I feel I want to, if that makes sense. So if I've got a couple of hours free, it doesn't matter what time of day it is, I will just grab my camera and go out and just respond to whatever I see and decide where I feel like I want to go. There's still on occasions when I'll say, oh, I'm going to get up early tomorrow and go here. But most of the time it's just, I've got a few hours free, I'll go out with my camera today and then just see where I fancy going. Because I much prefer doing that now, because I have no expectations and it allows me to just respond to whatever happens. And I never go home disappointed now. And in fact, I come home now with much more images that I really like and feel connected to than I used to when I plan. Because I think when you plan, although you're more likely to get the light that people deem as good light, for instance, golden hours or in storms and stuff, although you're more likely to get that if you plan, you also often go with preconceived ideas and then can be left disappointed. I just love responding. And if nature aligns and light is beautiful, or I'm free around sunset or sunrise, then so be it. But just quite an enjoy for me.
I think that's a really good attitude. And what you said really resonates around being able to just go out in any time of the day or any kind of light, basically, because I'm with you. I don't think there's such a thing as bad conditions or bad light. They don't exist. you've got what you've got, and any time is a good time to go and take photos. Now, it might not be the best time to take certain types of photo, because you certainly can't do astro in the middle of the day unless you've got a very good hookup to one of the space telescopes or something. But I think that attitude and that dropping of expectations is something that a lot of people that I've been speaking to on the podcast have said for them, dropping away those expectations has really made a big difference to their photography. When did you start to come to that realization and say, okay, if I stop thinking about what I should be taking a shot of and just go out and do it, when did that really kick in for you?
I think, again, it was during the pandemic, because I think when I started doing like macro during the day and I started to be like, wow, even in basking sunshine in the summer, I'm still getting photographs. I would never have thought of doing photography at that time of day before. Or even in the pouring rain, really grey day, I was getting images I loved. I thought, why not do this with landscapes as well and just go out in whatever the weather is and respond. And I also think I used to host landscape photography workshops in my local area, and I stopped that then last year. But one thing I'd realised through them, we were out from sunrise to sunset usually, but sometimes the best conditions were not the golden hours. They were just random rain showers or rainbows that would appear in the middle of the day. And that opened me up as well to the fact that there really is no good or bad time, really. It's about just, I always say there's no bad conditions. It's just, you just got to adapt to what you photograph depending on the weather and what style you photograph in and what subjects you choose. But yeah, it's been a process of just a number of things opening me up to the fact, you know, why limit myself? I love sunrise and sunset. They're beautiful times of day, but they're not always accessible. And the busier my business gets, the more I'm not free at those times of day. So just have to go out whenever I've got the time.
So with that experimentation also comes experimentation by its very nature means that you're not always going to be successful. You said that your strike rate of successful photographs has actually gone up. I'm just interested, where did that sort of switch for you as well? Because when you're experimenting, I certainly know that I expect, if I'm doing, when I first started doing ICM, no idea what I was doing or exactly how to get the settings right or the movement of the camera the way that I wanted it to capture what I wanted. So how did you learn to deal with those failures, and were there any techniques that you used to then overcome them and say, all right, I'm going to go off and experiment anyway?
Yeah, I think for me, it was a process of shifting mindsets, and also something that some people might struggle to grasp a little bit. But again, it's getting back into that feeling. Like, I notice when I'm really feeling, when I'm out there, like I'm really connecting with a subject.
Yeah,
I love almost every image I create of it, because I've put so much feeling and emotion and so much time into seeing that subject that when I actually press the shutter button, it's like that image has so much meaning to me in so much respects. So for me, I think it's been more, now I don't go out as much and just snap away. I really feel into the scene. I really look around me. I really connect to it. And then I get my camera out, and I don't know, I'm quite a spiritual person. I just find there's a lot of in photography for me. So when I'm putting a lot of energy and time into connecting with things, I just find that energy's transpired and connected to the photograph in the end. And I also have come to this mindset of, actually, what is a good photograph? I work with a lot of people through mentoring and stuff. And I used to critique images, but I don't anymore, because I want them to like their images, not for me to say to them, oh, you could do this or you could do that. Like, I might suggest things, but really I want them to be happy with their images. So it's about getting people to think, if you're not satisfied with this, why are you not satisfied with it? Because I'm seeing beauty here and here. And that's the thing. It's, we can look at all these award-winning images, and there's often a lot of similarities in compositions or lights or whatever it may be. But actually, it's like, what makes a good image? And to me, it's about, as long as the photographer that's created the image likes it, then it's a good image. Even if it's abstract and out there, it's a good image because the photographer that created it liked it. So I think it's been a process of me just learning to like my images and photograph what I really feel connected to photograph with. I think when you're really true to yourself and what you love, then it just, you're going to love your images. Do you know what I mean? Where I think we all fall into this state often, and I have in my journey of photograph what, like I said earlier, what we're kind of told makes good images. And then although we might still like them, we like less of them and we're not as connected to them. So yeah, quite a long answer there, but I hope it makes sense.
It's all right. It was a pretty long question as well. I guess one of the things that comes out of that for me is that you're happier now with your photography than it sounds like some photographers are, because a lot of people, particularly when they get caught up in social media and comparing themselves to other people's, comparing their work to other people's work, they start to get into that, I'm not worthy, the imposter syndrome kicks in. Have you ever had to deal with that? And if so, what have you done, I guess, is what you've done so far, how you've gotten out of that imposter syndrome feeling?
I've definitely felt that. I think we all do. It's part of being human. And there's something you said there that's quite interesting, I think, but I feel it's all an internal journey. So how I've tried to get through it is through working on myself. So it's not necessarily linked to photography, but the more comfortable I become in myself and my own skin, the more I am accepting of my photography. And if I'm honest, I don't really use social media anymore. I came off Facebook last year. Mm-hmm. I've got Instagram, but I don't tend to actually look at other people's stuff that much anymore. I use it for my own work occasionally to promote my own podcast and my own videos and write stuff and things, but I never don't really use it now for inspiration. And even in terms of YouTube videos and stuff, I've been making YouTube videos for 6 years and I used to watch almost every other landscape photographer. But now it's rare that I watch anybody else's videos. But I think it's just because you can so easily get swayed, like you can get inspired. It's some incredibly inspiring.
It's a double-edged sword. It's about managing which edge of the blade you're going to use or you're going to let into your mind.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but it is. It's a process. And you hear people speak about it all the time, this imposter syndrome. And like I say, I've had it before and I don't doubt that I will feel it again at some point because I think it comes in cycles. But yeah, I really feel it's an internal process of the more we do our internal work and maybe don't compare ourselves to others, the less we feel that. But it can be a challenge sometimes. It's a challenging journey to go on, but yeah.
Definitely. I wouldn't mind, if you don't mind, touching on the YouTube experience. Where did that kind of kick in for you? How did you get started in that? And what do you see it doing for you? I'm always interested in why people do things and why they continue them, because people start things and you see some people will go so far and then just stop, give up or whatever because they feel they're not getting traction or something like that. But I'm interested in those people that have done things like yourself for 6 years. There's obviously something that's driving you to create in that way. What is it that's driving you to first off kick it off, but also continue it?
So I began pretty much on a whim. Like I never started it because I wanted or expected people to watch me. Like my first video was about conservation, about planting trees in the Scottish Highlands, and then some tourism stuff. And then it got into photography. But I just, to begin with, it was like I'd done photography for a number of years and I thought, I've never tried video. Why don't I try video? And at the time, I was incredibly shy. Like I just wouldn't speak to anybody. And beginning to speak to the camera actually helped me find my voice. It allowed me to have a way of voicing what I was seeing and how I was feeling and put it out there. And over time, it really helped me to improve my confidence. So I think this is why I've continued it, because I actually owe so much of my life to YouTube, which sounds quite big, but it's true. Like I've just noticed my confidence in speaking from being this really shy, young 20, whatever year old person to where I am now. It gave me that voice. And it was, I think, because I was one of the first women that did YouTube photography, especially landscape photography. And I was also in Scotland, which a lot of people resonate with Scotland. I think that's why my channel took off in the beginning. And it's been an interesting journey because I've never stayed the same. I began in conservation. Then I started doing landscape photography. I started traveling around Scotland. I did a lighthouse photography mission for a while. I started doing tourism work and promoting different areas. And now my YouTube channel is very much about self-exploration, about encouraging people to explore themselves, their emotions, this feeling that I keep speaking about. And I guess more philosophical concepts has crept into my videos in recent years. And I used to upload one every single week, but it's now one a month because I just feel I want them to have more depth and meaning. Yeah, I just love it. And actually, I owe my whole business to YouTube. I never, ever in a million years thought I would be self-employed. It was never on my agenda. But because of YouTube, I was able to start my business and do what I do. So I owe a lot to YouTube. It's where I've met all of my obviously followers and clients. And I just, there's something about it that I love now. I come up with ideas and I love filming and I love the editing process and putting that thought into something and then publishing it. And I think, because I don't really do anything with my images. So me putting my images into a video and telling a story around those images is how I use my photography. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I think that's absolutely awesome, Kim. Your description of how it's helped you, I think, is something that's probably a little bit unique with some of the people that I've spoken to, that both YouTubers but also other photographers. People have spoken about how it's helped them recover from feelings of loss or from other mental health issues, but very few have actually spoken about how it's actually helped them build confidence. And that part, that aspect of it is fascinating. I'm interested about how the business decision came where you said, okay, now I'm going to do this full time. I'm going to pack up work and decide to go off and join the circus or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, it was a very slow process. And it's only actually been in the last year and a half that I've actually been earning enough to live on. So for me, to begin with, I was a nurse. And although I enjoyed many aspects of nursing, I would look out the window every morning and wish that I was out in nature. And then because of health issues as well, I couldn't sustain the 12-hour shifts. So to get out of nursing, I was, at the time I began my YouTube channel, and then I did a year's internship with a conservation charity in the UK called the RSPB. So I lived as a volunteer on a nature reserve for a year and volunteered doing practical land management and survey work with wildlife and nature reserves. And when that came to an end, I didn't know what to do with my life because my registration as a nurse had lapsed. I definitely didn't want to go back to it. There was no jobs because at the time, like 80 people were going for every single conservation job that came up. So I just slowly began to be self-employed. And it all began with a little bit of money coming in from YouTube and the occasional workshop here and there. And I was just incredibly fortunate at the time that my partner was very supportive and I didn't have too many financial outgoings. So slowly I began to do more workshops, do more offerings. YouTube slowly began to grow. And then I guess it was last year when I launched the latest project, Photographic Connections, that the business has actually taken off to the point where I can now support myself completely. So it's been an interesting process because I think, you know, going from having a salaried government job to
A steady income, is it has that sense of security that you're not going to lose your house or lose power or food and all the rest of that sort of thing, all the necessities of life.
Yeah. But I think it's just that slow process. I think inside I always knew this is what I just kept feeling called to just keep going. And one day it'll work out. And who knows, being self-employed, it could be all over tomorrow, but I would hope that isn't the case. But it is, it's that gradual process. I don't think I could have been somebody that could just quit and go straight into it. As I've said, it took me 5 years to get to the point where I'm actually earning a full-time wage from it. Yeah. I guess a lot of people do it on the side, don't they? They go part-time and then they do their business part-time and then slowly build it up. But yeah, everybody's journey is different.
Absolutely. That's why I love doing this podcast, because everybody has a different way of thinking about things and doing things. I guess looking at that business side of things, how do you do the balancing act of marketing, finance, the actual photography and video and the actual work itself? Because a lot of people going into being self-employed don't realize that they've got to be chief marketing officer, they've got to be the chief financial officer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you wear each of the hats? What kind of time do you spend on each aspect, the admin side versus the side?
I don't really think about it, to be honest. Okay. I think I know this has to be done, this has to be done, this has to be done. And I just do it in amongst everything else. And I set times for the year when I know I'm going to be less busy than other times. And yeah, I think because it's taken me so long to build it up, it's taken me, I've had a decent amount of time to work out the finances and the taxes and the marketing. And so, yeah, it's been a process, but yeah, it is. It's definitely a balancing act. But I think it's like with marketing now, I don't really think about it as much as I used to. It's just more, it just, yeah, I struggle to answer questions like that because I'm not, strangely, I'm not very business minded. I know what needs to be done and I get it done, but I don't really think about it. I just do it.
There's a lot of people that do things intuitively and, as you say, needs to be done. So you just roll your sleeves up and get in and do it. So that makes sense in some ways. I know other people that are very much about this is the business plan and these are the steps that I need to take, et cetera, and they work through it that way. But I think yours is a really interesting way of doing it.
I've tried the bit. I did work with a company, an organization here in the UK called Business Gateway a few years ago, try and do business planning and this, that, and the next thing. But it just never worked for me. Like, it just never worked. I think because a lot of my, of course, audience and marketing happens online and it's there trying to push other things and the more traditional methods. And it's, I don't know, I just, that more traditional route's just never worked for me. I guess it comes back to the feeling aspect. I don't know. It's just, that's a big thing for me, isn't it?
Do you know, if it works, probably. Doing things by feel is a totally valid method, I think.
Do you do this full-time as a business?
I do, yes. And I'm only in my second year now, and so not quite making enough to live on. I've got a bit of a nest egg, which is slowly being frittered away. But where it's, as you say, a process. And I'm probably a little bit more, I like to know what I'm going to spend my time on in terms of, okay, well, it's time to sit down and do some marketing, time to sit down and do the finances. And mind you, a lot of that I just leave until tax time when I have to do we have what's called a BAS statement, which is the business statement, which works out we have GS thing. So you've got to declare to the government how much you think you're going to earn and how much you have earned and how much GST you've collected so that you can pay them the GST, et cetera, which is not my favourite thing to do or talk about either. But as you said, it's just something that's got to be done. So you just get in and you do it and get it done as quickly as possible and as accurately as possible and hope you get out of hot water with the government as far as I'm concerned. The less I have to do with them, the better. I'd much rather talk about your business. One of the things I ask just about everyone that does this full-time and a few that do it part-time as well, one of the things that people sometimes struggle with is how to actually price their work and how to value their time and so forth. Have you put any thought in behind that, and are there any tips that you could give people, or again, have you just done it by feel?
Oh, it's been probably the hardest thing for me. In the beginning, I used to massively underprice myself. I used to do so much for free and I used to do so much for free. But the thing is, back then I wasn't, I didn't have any self-confidence. I was starting out. I was putting the feelers out there. I also didn't know what I wanted to do with my business. I just knew that people were interested in a couple of things I was doing, but I didn't know, actually, I didn't have a clear idea of what am I going to do with my photography and how am I going to make this into something. I did things very cheaply in the beginning, but that gave me experience. It gave me experience of working with clients, of working with brands, of working with companies. And at the time it was okay because I wasn't in desperate need of money. But again, as I've worked on, it goes back to that self-work stuff, that self-development. I guess the more you work on yourself and you also realize as the years go on how much money you need to live on, you have to start pricing yourself at a price that works. I've, of course, do things for free. My podcast is free. YouTube is free. I don't hardly get any ad revenue at all. I've got one sponsor just now, but you never know how long that's going to last for. But I have, of course, my other offerings. Now, if people want to, they can work with me one-to-one. But of course, you have to pay to do that. And I've got workshops and I've got an online community and courses. But I always have like price ranges. So like my membership community is very cheap. And it just means that people can get involved for a very low fee. And then if people want to then do a course or a workshop or work with me one-to-one, it's like the prices naturally will go up. But it's been a huge process. And yeah, it's scary because you really want to value yourself and your time. And especially now, because I've been doing a lot of courses and my knowledge and expertise is, of course, growing as the years go on. I think it's natural that you have to start putting your prices up because I guess you're more experienced and stuff. Plus inflation and everything else that goes on in the back.
The cost of everything.
It is hard though. Like I'd say to anybody that's starting out, it's that fear. You don't want to put the prices too high because you don't want people not to get involved. But equally, if you undersell yourself, people think it's too cheap and also don't buy into it. So it's challenging, but yeah, I don't, yeah. But
I know I'm constantly losing customers because they think I'm too pricey. And that's for things like prints and whatever. And it's, do you understand what actually it takes to A, get that image, process that image, get it printed, get it sent out to you, etc. It is a process in itself just to get from that pushing the button to where you actually end up with a print in your hand. And yeah, it just amazes me how people undervalue that stuff as well in today's society, which brings me to another question, which I'm going to ask in a minute. But before I do that, what's the number one thing you've learned through running your business?
That is an interesting question. I think the number one thing I've learned is the importance of being true to yourself. And I mean that because I went down the route of trying to do so many different things that didn't align with me. And not enjoying them. And it's only been through working out, actually, what can I contribute to the photography world? I don't enjoy teaching photography, as in I don't enjoy teaching settings. I don't enjoy teaching the technicalities. I don't enjoy the gear sides. But what I love is seeing people connect with nature, seeing them out there with their cameras and creating images that speak to them and seeing their well-being improve as a result. And I think because I used to be a nurse, health and wellness is so important to me in my own journey, but also in other people. For me, it's been through getting back to that and getting back to why did I get into photography in the first place? And I guess finding, I don't need to use the word niche because I think it always changes. As we change, it changes. Oh. But I think that's a mistake. Not necessarily a mistake. There's no such thing as mistakes. I think it's all lessons. But yeah, I went down that route of trying to do everything that other landscape photographers do. And it just didn't work. It didn't align with me. That's the thing. If you want to run your own business, you've got to be ensuring you're doing something you enjoy and doing it in a way that's true and authentic to you. Because otherwise, you're just not going to enjoy it, or it's not going to work, or you're going to get burnt out. So yeah, that's been my biggest learning. Yeah. Finding the way to do it that works for you.
Definitely. I'm interested to go back to what I was saying before. Where do you see photography's place in society?
I personally see it massively growing in the future. I think the world of photography is changing massively just now. And this could just be because of the people that I'm interacting with. But I really feel, for so many years, I feel photography has been so gear and setting orientated and like camera wars and competitions. And I'm seeing more and more people getting into photography now and speaking about the experience, the joy they get. I'm seeing more and more people getting into the creative elements of photography and trying things like ICM. A few years ago, it was rare to come across an ICM photographer. Yeah. Every second person is doing it. So I think the world of photography is changing massively just now. I almost feel like it's changing for the better because I almost feel like a lot of photographers are not doing competitions anymore, or they're not as... I know some photographers that have been in the industry for 20, 30 years, and they're selling all of their expensive gear and going back to one camera and one lens. And it's just like, whoa. So it's a big shift just now, but I think more people are opening up to photography, and who knows what the future holds, but I'm really excited.
Where you live, how has that shaped how you shoot and how you think about what you shoot and how you shoot what you shoot?
Massively. So I'm very much a local photographer. There was a period of my life for about 4 or 5 years where I lived, it was only 2 hours away, but I did not connect with the landscape there at all. I would go out and still do photography, but I just didn't feel it. And since moving back to the area that I was brought up in last year, my love for photography just exploded again. Of course, I'm based in Scotland, which is renowned for being one of the most beautiful countries in the world for landscape photography, but it's not the famous locations like the Isle of Skye and Glencoe that interest me. I used to holiday in Skye a lot when I was a child, and I think it's a beautiful part of the world, but I've never connected to it as a photographer. I've tried, but it's just not worked. But I love my local area because I just feel such a connection here, and I can just walk to my local woodlands and find photographs that I love, and I'm 10 minutes from the beach and 10 minutes from the river, and I've got everything here apart from mountains, and I just love it. I think being here was what inspired me to get into photography in the first place, with the sunsets at the beach, and now being back here but connecting more with lakes and rivers and ponds and woodlands. Yeah, it massively affects the work I do and my inspiration, definitely.
Wonderful. Do you have a memorable experience that you've had out taking photos that you'd like to tell us?
I've had so many. Like when I used to travel quite a bit around Scotland to do photography, although I wasn't always happy with the images I'd come home with, I witnessed some incredible places. I think one of the most beautiful and unforgettable moments I had was when I went down to a part of Scotland in East Lothian called St. Abbs. Mm-hmm. That could be in the Borders, actually. That's in the Borders. And went to a lighthouse. At the time, I was trying to photograph every lighthouse in Scotland. And just the sunset was to this world. When we got there, it was really grey and overcast and just didn't look like anything was going to happen. And then it was that one of those sunsets that just pops out at the bottom of the clouds last minute. The whole landscape was filled like orange and red. And it lasted 5 minutes. It was just insane. And then as we walked back to the car, this mist descended and we were walking through this mist at the coast with, just this blue twilight light. It was just fantastic. Unbelievable. It was so beautiful. And I'm sure there's so many more, like watching the Northern Lights dance. I used to photograph the Northern Lights a lot. And there's so many. But I think when you've been doing photography for 14 years, it's hard to pick one.
I know, it's probably an unfair question, but I like to see what it's more about how people answer it than necessarily. It's great hearing some of the stories, and believe me, I've heard some doozies, but it's also about how you answer it. For me, it brings out what's important to you. That's really what I'm trying to drive at. That said, people also, as well as having the wonderful experiences, also have the not so wonderful experiences. Have you got any horror stories or a particular session that kind of went?
I don't have any horror stories, but I do remember 2 years ago that I went to the Isle of Skye, and that's the last time I went to an iconic location in Scotland for photography. And I was meant to be going there with a friend for a weekend trip, but I was, of course, going to do photography and film some YouTube videos. And she couldn't make it in the end because her dog was ill. And I was in this chalet by myself. And I went down to a famous location called Elgol one afternoon. And I just felt so down and low. And I was looking at this scene that so many photographers have traveled the world to come to Elgol. It's a phenomenal scene. But I just didn't feel it. I was like, I've just traveled 4.5 hours to come here and I'm just not feeling it. And I just felt so down, and I took some images and I just wasn't feeling it. And that's when I started doing a bit of ICM, and I thought, this is a bit better. But I just still wasn't feeling it. And then I went back to my chalet, and that night we had a storm. I just remember being on my own in this chalet on the island by myself, absolutely terrified. And I just thought, why am I doing this? Like, why am I making myself go to these places that don't even speak to me for photography and just not enjoying it? And I think that was a big turning point for me of, I need to stop chasing the iconic places and actually start doing what's true to me. But I just remember feeling so low that weekend and so annoyed with myself for spending all this money coming somewhere and then just not making the most of it. But I just was like, I'm just not inspired. And I just remember feeling, what's wrong with me? Why am I at this gorgeous location that people pay thousands of pounds to come to Scotland just to photograph this place? And I'm not connecting with it. Wow. But I just remember feeling at the time like there's something wrong with me. Why, as a photographer, am I not connecting with this? But I've just come to realize that we're all different. And back then I had this uncomfortable feeling inside, but I couldn't work out where it was coming from, and I was blaming myself. But really, it was like, it just, we're all different.
Where did you learn your photography and processing techniques. Was it, are you self-taught? Are you gone through an education process of more formally?
Yeah, I'm all self-taught. So when I first began photography, like composition just intuitively came to me. I think because I watched so much light and the weather before I did photography, it took me a while to learn the settings and learn how to use filters and all that stuff. Because it was 14 years ago, like YouTube was a thing, but it was very new. But I remember finding the odd video online, or I'd buy the occasional photography magazine and try and learn from that. Just learn the basics, really, and the odd article online. And yeah, a lot of trial and error. So yeah, completely self-taught. And of course, as YouTube and everything's evolved, then learning more and more techniques from other people that are sharing them. So.
Yeah. This makes it a lot easier, I think.
Yeah. I think maybe sometimes going to learn settings at an evening class or something can be good. But yeah, I think you really have to be out there photographing to really do it. I know a lot of people that have done photography courses and then they never use them again because you're in a classroom and it's just not you.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. But the photographers who have gone out there and actually just learnt on the location or whatever.
I liken it to learning a language. If you don't use it, you lose it. You've got to get out and practice it, because it doesn't matter how you're teaching yourself, that experience, that experimentation, the failures, which turn into lessons, hopefully, for those that are learning from failure. They're the things that actually make you a better photographer, the ability to go out there and practice it. And the more you practice anything, the better you become at it.
That's the thing, isn't it? When you're learning a language, they say go to the country that speaks
exactly.
the language.
You've got to immerse yourself in it. And if you just go to a classroom, they teach you some settings, they show you a few things, and then you just leave the camera on the shelf, then I forget who it was, but somebody said to me once, I've never taken a good photo from a couch.
I like that one. Yeah.
That said, what have you learned about the world through photography? You've obviously learned a lot about yourself, but I'm interested in what externally have you learned?
So much. I just spend so much time observing nature, and I've just seen so many beautiful things, and learning about like astrophotography is just incredible, and learning about the stars and the constellations and what causes the northern lights, and learning about birds and migration and looking at these birds and where they've come from and then photographing them. Yeah, I'm very curious. So like when I'm out, I'm very observant, and then just being able to learn about actually what's happening in nature. How do trees grow and all this kind of stuff? Like I'm very curious and interested in it all. So photography's given me the means of and the way of getting out there and seeing nature, and has led me to want to learn more about it as a result. So yeah, I've learned so much being out with my camera. Yeah.
Everybody that I've spoken to, there's been a few exceptions which prove the rule, but most people I've spoken to get either into a creative rut or come up against times when they're just not feeling it. You know, your example in Elgar is a classic example, I think, of where you get to that point where you go, okay, I'm not feeling it. How do you get out of that feeling? How do you change your mindset and shift gears to get around those creative blocks that everyone has?
I have two answers to this, I would say.
Cool.
The first one is, if it happens and it's like a short-term thing, so like it's a couple of days, for instance, or a week, then I won't force anything. I'll just say, do you know what? I'm not feeling it this week. That's okay. Just let it go. Like when we force things, especially if we see photography as a creative pursuit, when we force creativity, it's never going to be the way we want it to be. And I'm like, maybe this week's just not meant for photography. Maybe I just need to rest. Mm. But if it can take for a number of days or a number of weeks, it'll be, for me, it's about switching it up. It's about trying a different subject, trying a different lens. If I've been doing macro for weeks, it's about going back to ICM. Or if I've been in the forests for a few months, it's about let's go to the coast. Or do you know what? Maybe try and get up for sunrise tomorrow and see if that sparks something. Or yeah. And also I listen to a lot. I don't listen to a lot of photography podcasts, but I listen to a lot of other podcasts that spark my imagination. And I know that's something that a lot of people say about the podcast I have, Photographic Connections, is they say like it inspires them to get out. So I find listening to other people, and I guess me being a podcast host myself, I get so much inspiration from my guests. I try different techniques, different subjects because of what they've shared with me. So now we've got all of this wealth of inspiration out there. But the trick is to listen to the inspiration, then actually go out and act on it, because we can otherwise spend hours and hours watching video after video or podcast after podcast.
Yeah, and you never leave your couch. And as I said before, you don't take good photos from your couch.
So as soon as you see something of inspiration or hear something of inspiration, write it down. And the next time you've got an hour free, go out and give it a go.
Fantastic. That's really good advice. What's your favourite thing about being a photographer?
The ability to see the world from a different angle, I think. We all walk around life looking at the world from eye level, like one focal range. The beauty of being a photographer is that we can zoom into things and get a different perspective. We can photograph the night sky and see thousands of stars when our eye can only see hundreds. We can use a macro lens to see the tiny hairs on the back of a fly or the pollen on the bee. You can't see that with the eye. So for me, that's the most incredible thing, is being able to see things that are out there that we can't visually perceive without a camera.
I see. What's your least favourite thing?
For me, it's about being in a world, going back to the whole gear situation. I think for me, it's about being part of a world that's very competition and gear orientated. I've always struggled with that. So yeah, I think because I'm not that way minded, I've always found that quite difficult for some reason. But I guess the more I shift into my own mindset and my own niche, it's not becoming such a thing anymore. But it's something that I've always really struggled with, is that gear war side of photography.
Yeah, I've personally never really understood it, because Sony makes all the sensors now anyway. So just about every camera's the same.
Yeah, exactly. And some of my favourite images I've ever made were taken at the beginning of my journey on a beginner's DSLR. It just doesn't make... I always think there's a camera for everybody, and it's not always about price or megapixels. It's about what works for you. Yeah. When for some people, it's going to be a small, compact point and shoot. For other people, it's going to be thousands of pounds worth of gear. But each photographer's individual.
One of my favourite images that I've ever taken, and it's one of the nicest, I won't say the nicest, just one of the most dramatic sunrises I've ever seen, was shot on a point and shoot, because that's what I had with me. So it was, I don't know, back in 2006 or 7 or something like that. And it's still one of my favourite images, because it just looks so dramatic, but it'll probably never win any prizes. Not that I'm trying. But I'm interested a little bit. We talked about not wanting to talk about gear, and I don't want to talk about the gear so much, but the process from when you get home from a shoot, are you straight into editing, or are you someone that wants to leave it for a while and let it marinate and come back to it later after you've forgotten and gotten over the initial excitement that a shoot usually gives you?
It changes. I think when I used to do YouTube every week, it was a case of go out, film the video, come back, look at
the... You kind of that drive, you had to do it.
Yeah. Whereas since I've stepped back a little bit from that, sometimes I can be editing images from weeks ago. Sometimes I will still come back on the same day and look at them that evening, but sometimes it can be a few days later, even a few weeks later. I've let go of that need to process them straight away. I think there's something quite nice I've come to realise of looking back at images from weeks ago and reliving that moment. I think sometimes, like, I always used to come back and do it straight away. And at the time, that worked for me, because I was still in the moment and still excited and looking forward to seeing them. But there's something about now looking at them a couple of days or weeks later and reflecting back on that moment and then doing a bit of editing, because it's almost, I don't know, the imagination starts working and I quite like it. Yeah, but I go through, I think because we've maybe established, I go through all these like curves of things are always changing. I've never had the same routine in my photography. It's always shifting and evolving.
That's cool. What's the worst... Well, actually, what's the best and or the worst piece of advice that you've ever been given?
I don't know about that one, actually. I think it's when people say you need this to do X, Y, or Z. That's one thing about being on YouTube for many years. You will occasionally get comments from people that are saying you're doing this wrong. You need this. If I'm hand-holding my camera, sometimes people will say you need a tripod for that. Or I think that's the kind of thing. It's about, sometimes it's... I think I've realized, especially with modern cameras, there's five ways to do the same thing. When it's about finding what way works for you. So it's like when people say you have to focus this way, you need this piece of gear, you need that. And it's okay, that might make things a bit easier, it might work for you, but it doesn't work for everybody. Or I think that's the thing. It's maybe a preconceived ideas some people maybe have about things that they feel you need, but that you don't always need.
What about good advice? Have you had anybody come up with something that you've said, oh, I'm pleased you told me about that?
Loads of times, but I can't, yeah. There's always incredible advice out there and people willing to offer suggestions and stuff. I can't think of anything specific off the top of my head. Yeah. I just love it when you come across somebody that's doing something that's really inspiring. Like you see an image or a technique and you're like, wow. And then they are open enough to share with you how they've created it. I think that's beautiful. I love it when that happens. That's always nice. And yeah, so that's happened quite a lot of times. So I can't think of like a specific moment, but I do love it when you connect with other photographers that are open and willing to share how they've done things with you so that you can give it a go for yourself. Yeah,
I think that's fantastic. What advice would you give somebody that's just starting out?
Experiment, practice, get out as much as you can and try not to get hung up on too much on what you feel you're doing right or wrong. Just go out with a camera and point it at what interests you and experiment, because that's the best way to learn, I think.
Okay, thank you. We need to wrap up soon. Who do you think I should be talking to on the podcast?
Oh, there is so many people. I'm trying to think specifically of landscape photographers. I love listening to a guy called Paul Sanders, but he's not specifically landscape, but he does a lot of landscape work.
Sure.
Because he has quite a philosophical, spiritual sort of connection to photography, he really resonates with me. Yeah. I speak to so many people myself. I'm just trying to think of people that might be of interest. Margaret Soraya is a good one as well.
I've spoken to Margaret. Yeah, she's fantastic. I was having a chat with her. She was really good, really generous with her time as well.
Yeah, she's lovely, really lovely. And there's just people like Simon Baxter and, gosh, there's so many people. Rachel Talabat. There's just so many. There's just so many incredible landscape photographers out there. It's really difficult to pinpoint one.
Yeah, I know it's a bit of an unfair question to put on somebody because they'll have somebody that they know that might listen and go, oh, she didn't mention me.
Exactly. Yeah. I think because I'm in the YouTube world as well, I think everyone expects me to list off all the YouTube photographers, which is why I'm trying to think of people that aren't necessarily on YouTube.
They're not hard to find.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's fine. All right, I've got one more question for you. And for many of my listeners, it's the most important one I ask. Do you like pineapple on pizza?
Oh.
I know it's very divisive.
Not on pizza. I love pineapple on its own in a smoothie, but not on pizza.
Fair enough. Thank you very much, Kim. It's been wonderful getting to know you a little bit better and to meet you for the first time as well. Where can people find your work other than YouTube, of course?
Yeah, of course, YouTube under Kim Grant, or look up Photographic Connections. I've got the website.com, a weekly podcast episode, Photographic Connections. And all the kind of workshops, courses, mentoring and everything that I do is on the Photographic Connections website. And the only social media I use is Instagram. So you can find me under Kim Grant Photography on Instagram.
Fantastic. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you. It's been lovely, Grant.
Thanks again for listening to Landscape Photography World. I hope you enjoyed the show and keep listening because I'll be joined by some great guests in upcoming episodes. You can find my work in this podcast at grantswinburnephotography.com. I'm also on Vero, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram and Facebook. I'm Grant. Hope to see you out shooting soon.